This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome to Health and Living with me, T. Xiaoyik. World Immunization Week falls on the last week of April every year, and this year the theme is Vaccines Work for All. And I have on the line with me Professor Dato Dr. Lokman Hakim, Pro Vice Chancellor for Research at International Medical University, to talk about Malaysia's priorities when it comes to vaccination, especially as immunization targets have potentially been challenged by increasing vaccine hesitancy, for one, that's been happening for the last few years, but also the current COVID-19 pandemic. How are you, Dato' Lokman?
Yes, I'm fine. Thank you very much.
Dato' Lokman, for a long time, I think immunization was one of Malaysia's greatest public health successes. So perhaps you could draw us that picture, a big picture of what kind of progress did we make in our vaccination rates? And more importantly, how did that translate into improvements in our children's health?
I say that vaccination program is still doing very well, with consistently high coverage of more than 90% for almost all the vaccines. Although we do have pockets of under coverage, but generally overall, I think the coverage has been very good. In fact, WHO and UNICEF in their recent report on national immunization coverage estimate for 2018 also showed a very similar high coverage for Malaysia for the last decades. This is good. This good coverage certainly will have a very significant impact on the country's advances in childhood health and well-being that we are enjoying today. Because vaccine preventable diseases in many ways affect the growth and development of children from birth. And it is a major cause of morbidity and mortality worldwide. And we have been enjoying a remarkable progress in terms of child health. For example, our under 5 mortality for more than 2 decades now, it has been a single digit kind of rate, around 7.8 or something like that. Mm-hmm. And it's comparable to that of many other developed nations. And on the specific vaccine preventable infection, we do have eliminated polio for many years until quite recently, but it's just, even that was still an accumulation, it's an imported case or a case. And most of other vaccine preventable diseases, although there's still some concern about the rising trend in some of the infections like diphtheria, measles, and neonatal tetanus, but it has not reached a major epidemic portion. We do still have sporadic small clusters of infection, but in general, we have not faced huge challenge of a huge outbreak so far.
What would you say are the factors that made our immunization programs such a success and the fact that we've been able to sustain it until now?
I think the good healthcare system is key to this. We have a very accessible healthcare infrastructure, including even in the remote areas. I mean, we always boosted ourselves in Malaysia where we have 90% of the population live within 5 kilometers of a static healthcare facilities. And I think that's quite true, very true, in fact. And when we do not have the static facility that provide the healthcare services, we complement with other services like the mobile clinics by land or by river and sea. Even we introduce flying doctor services to remote areas in Sabah, Sarawak, and even in Peninsula Malaysia, for example, the more difficult to access some of the Aboriginal group in Peninsula Malaysia, for example. Previously, we were dependent on the help of our armed forces to fly us, but I think from beginning 2016, we have incorporated the service into the system, whereby we contract out to have our personnel to go down to the remote areas. So with this kind of accessibility, then we can provide the vaccination program to the children that in need of it. Secondly, vaccine is provided free of charge for Malaysian in public clinics. I mean, if they choose to go to a private clinic, they have to pay themselves. But in general, in the public clinic, it's given free of charge. And thirdly, I think Malaysians are very passionate of children. I mean, we have been blessed in the form so far. I think we have a very passionate government that have a strong position for our child.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you look at childhood policies, any policies related to childhood development always gain attention from the government. Even for example, no matter who formed the government. For example, last year, the government approved another vaccine, the pneumococcal vaccination program,
yes,
despite being an expensive vaccine. So, I mean, these are, to me, all the factors that contribute toward the enhancement and sustainability of our vaccine program in the country.
Having said that, though, cases of even if polio in Sabah, the recent cases are imported cases, and even if last year there was the measles outbreak in the Batik community in Perak, so I mean they may be isolated, but is it cause? We can't lose sight of that, right? We can't just let them go. Yeah.
I mean, the problem with some of this issue, especially among the marginalized communities, vaccine hesitancy or refusal, it's not unique to Malaysia, but for the matter. I mean, apparently, it's a global concern, and we are having this problem everywhere. Of course, it does create a situation that it may risk the comeback of some of these infectious diseases, and that's what we are experiencing in some sporadic outbreak of the infection. And when the naive populations of the Aborigine, for example, that we have recently been exposed to this problem, then the situation can become very fatal. So, but as I said, this is not just in Malaysia, it's happening everywhere. For example, in 2019, last year, for example, the US, we had the largest number of measles cases ever in the last 10 years,
mm-hmm,
with more than 1,000 cases. And 10% of them had to be hospitalized, with 5% of them suffering from severe forms of complication. And since 2017, I think the WHO Western Pacific region has been experiencing resurgence of measles in some of the countries that have eliminated measles, like, for example, in Japan, Australia, and in New Zealand.
Mm-hmm.
And in some countries, like the Pacific Island, they have one huge outbreak in Samoa. But because in Samoa, the problem is because of low coverage of measles vaccination. The estimate was something like less than 15%. So while vaccine refusal and hesitancy may be the issue in many developed nations, but issue of accessibility is still an issue in some of the poorer countries. But for Malaysia, I think we have both. We have the problems of refusal, especially amongst the urbanized population. But still, we do have pockets of our population that have not yet had access to some of this population. When I say our population, I'm talking about every children that's present in our country.
Regardless of citizenship.
Yeah, because everybody plays the role to the transmission of infection.
Mm-hmm.
They don't see the boundaries of citizenship.
Mm-hmm.
So when we say about vaccine coverage, when we talk about vaccine coverage in a population perspective, we're talking about real poverty.
Yeah, so at the beginning of this year, the Ministry of Health worked with UNICEF and WHO to provide polio vaccination to all children in Sabah. And so that includes the non-Malaysian children. Do you think that's one of the strategies that Malaysia needs to consider to expand our coverage of immunization moving forward?
Yeah, I think we have to come to terms with this kind of this problem. I think the government have a very clear policies with regard to migrants, refugees, and stateless people.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the socio-political aspect of it. I think every country will certainly do have some form of policies. Right? But probably in this respect, the government may want to look at some of the best practices in other countries, for example, and how they manage health issues among this group of people. In terms of citizenship, we certainly will not recognize them in any way, but when it comes to issues of health, especially when the situation may impact on the local population, on our Malaysian population, for that matter. I mean, vaccine preventable diseases, for example, if we do have problems among these so-called stateless or marginalized children, they can put a risk to our own children in terms of the risk of getting those infection. So I think, we have to come to terms with this kind of a situation. We cannot allow this to continue forever. Mm-hmm. I mean, there must be some smart partnership or innovative way of how we can work toward this. I'm sure there's a lot of groups, NGOs, and who are very interested in working together in this kind of. But what probably we need to have a better, clear policy with regard to the involvement of the various NGOs, international bodies, and the government in addressing the problem. The fact that we are doing that in Sabah to mop up the vaccination among the children with the cooperation of UNICEF and other parties, I think something that we might want to look into in a more holistic way and make it into a clear policies about the direction that we'll be moving in the future. Because certainly the problem is not only limited to the situation in Sabah. Of course, Sabah is unique in the sense that the problems of the population there goes far beyond what we can imagine. But we do have problems among the refugees and migrants in Peninsula Malaysia too. Mm. So these are the things that maybe the government may want to have a look and come up with clear policy with regard to that.
And we have problems reaching our own Orang Asli communities as well. And that's something that I want to ask you to maybe talk a little bit about. So even though we have these accessible healthcare facilities for our own rural remote communities, why are there still pockets who are not being reached? But we'll go for a quick break first. I'm talking to Professor Dato' Dr. Lokman Hakim, Pro Vice Chancellor for Research at International Medical University, where discussing immunization priorities for Malaysia this World Immunization Week. Stay tuned, we'll be right back on BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Health and Living. I'm T. Xiao Ik. On the line with me is Professor Dato' Dr. Lokman Hakim, Pro Vice Chancellor for Research at International Medical University. It's World Immunization Week this week, the last week of April. And so we are discussing Malaysia's priorities when it comes to vaccination. And later we'll go a little bit into what are the kinds of unique challenges that the COVID-19 pandemic is posing towards our immunization services. But for now, we're talking about the immense and tremendous progress that our national immunization program has made over the decades. But we are also keeping our eye on the challenges and some areas to be concerned about. We've talked about stateless, migrant, and refugee communities and the importance of ensuring that all the children are vaccinated, regardless of whether they're Malaysian or not. But reaching our own rural and remote communities, Dato' Lokman, what can we do to ensure that even pockets, even if they are small pockets, for example, in the Batik community last year with their measles outbreak, that we don't want even that to be occurring, do we?
Sure, certainly. But honestly, dealing with highly mobile groups of Orang Asli and even the Penan is challenging. I mean, if you really want to completely immunize the entire population, it will be logistically and socially difficult. First, I mean, the trust to the system, I mean, that's one problem. But to get access to them is another problem. I was mentioning about the when we try to improve our healthcare services among the remote in interior Orang Asli previously by contracting out for frontline service and move in and do the vaccination. But even that also, I mean, if you have a specific schedule for visit, but when you land on the place, you might not find them there. So these are the challenge. I mean, it's not that there's no interest or effort to get them immunized, but again, to get self themselves is challenging by itself. Because they are naive population. Certainly, when they are not immunized, and they are exposed to this infection, they can suffer a huge outbreak and even very fatal kind of what we experienced recently. Another more logical approach is to control exposure of these people to outsiders. I don't know. I mean, whoever wants to get close to these people must have some form of certain permit or something like that. Because we cannot just, I mean, take the risk of this outsider bringing in all sort of viruses to this native population. I mean, I don't know. I mean, whether we can have that kind of approach rather than actually trying to get them to immunize, because the practicality and feasibility of immunizing them with that kind of lifestyle is tremendously difficult. I mean, this is a very challenging situation that I see with this kind of scenario.
And it's something that the Ministry of Health has been dealing with for so long as well. And I'm sure even when you were Deputy DG, it was something that you were grappling with.
Certainly, because despite all the efforts that we are putting in the investment, for example, I mean, the flying doctor service to these Orang Asli places, there are about 50 landing sites in the whole main range, the mountain. And we still go, despite the fact that the numbers sometimes are very small. I mean, just when we drop in and only about 10, 20 of them are around. But wherever we have the opportunity, we'll do provide the vaccination services. But again, some of this group are very mobile. They don't stay in one place and they refuse to get close to others. And this is where the challenge is.
And on the other hand, so that was about access by certain communities. And then on the other hand, as you said, it's other families and parents who don't want to have their children vaccinated. You know, it's either some form of hesitancy or outright refusal. Do you think that, the Ministry of Health is doing education, they are doing awareness to talk about the importance of vaccines, but do you think that there needs to be a different kind of approach? For instance, compulsory vaccination was being floated. Do you think that's perhaps a good idea?
Probably before we talk even about compulsion in vaccination, we may need to look at the issue of refusal and slightly different angle and different approach. I think parents are refusing for many various reasons, right? And these issues of whether the reason for refusing that is correct or not has been there for a long time. Even when we talk about the myth of all the thing about vaccine, like vaccine associated with autism, vaccine containing dangerous chemicals, and causing severe side effects, and the non-halal issue among us. And this has been there for a long time. Like autism, for example, has been there for 20 years, and despite all the scientific evidence that debunked the myth, but still, parents want to believe, they still want to believe, because you have to remember, nowadays especially, that parents can have access to all sorts of information, whether it's correct, whether it's wrong, whether it's hearsay. I mean, they can have access to anything. They believe what they want to believe. I mean, that's what I read.
Yes. Right. And they read what they want.
How much you want to do a campaign about this type of thing. It's still an individual parental issue. I think this is where we may need to change a little bit in our approach. I think we have to customize the problem based at the problem, why they are actually refusing and why they are hesitant. So in this regard, I was very interested to find out. I mean, there was a recent publication in the Journal of Infection and Public Health that deal with this issue in Malaysia. I mean, it's not easy to get this kind of studies being published. The researchers, in fact, the researchers are from Ministry of Health and also from University of Malaya Group. They use qualitative method to face an online interview with parents who refuse vaccination. What they found? They found that there are 6 personal health beliefs: lack of confidence in modern medicine and healthcare, pharmaceutical conspiracy, preference for natural approach, religious belief, and having partners with the same belief have a strong influence on their decision. And secondly, 4 vaccine-related concerns: negative effect and the content, doubt of the necessity for the vaccination, a lack of information and knowledge about vaccine. So if you notice, I mean, there are various reasons behind why parents are refusing. And interestingly, during this this study, this is what the parents say. I mean, they felt that communication and empathy from health professionals are still very much lacking. So parents recommend, in fact, they recommended that more empathy from the healthcare professional and more evidence on the safety and content purity might help to change their mind. So you see that they are demanding for a more customized kind of consultation when they refuse. I think this is the question is now whether our primary healthcare, our frontliners who deals with these people, are trained in communication skill to address this kind of problem. And because I strongly believe that you need a separate, a totally different communication skill when you want to deal with this kind of situation. And whether we have a network of resources outside the system, for example, access to religious scholars, access to other expertise that can help in the individual consultation. I mean, for example, when our nurse is consulting, I mean, is communicating and trying to address the problem with this parent, does they have an access to, say, like religious scholars that when the issue is pertaining to religious matters? Mm-hmm. I mean, these are the things kind of, I think probably we need to relook at and how we are managing the group. Because I think in the Malaysian context, although the anti-vaxxer, we call it, they may have their own group, but they are not in just one place. I think we used to have that problem before with one religious group, I think the Arkham or something like that, where they are in a commune. And the entire community is having that kind of problem, so we have to address the entire community. But now, I think they are everywhere. Mm-hmm. I mean, but they are on their own, although they may have organization to counter the support works, no? But at the end, they decide on their own. And I think this is where I think our system may have to relook at how we are managing this group of people.
And so does that mean that, like you said, you wanted to put aside the question of compulsion? Does that mean that there's no place for something like, this kind of...
No, I think at the end of the day, the government ministry need to look at some of the legal framework, how they can actually ensure that the uptakes of the vaccine is good so as to achieve the ultimate objective of preventing or even if possible to eliminate the vaccine preventable diseases. Mm-hmm. In fact, earlier for the year, IMU and Malaysian Association of Public Health Specialists, we did organize a policy dialogue on compulsory vaccination. Mm-hmm. I mean, in fact, we call various stakeholders to the table, and we have some very good discussion about the issues. We have presentation about what are the best practices in other countries, how they manage the situation. And at the end of of that session, I think we came up with a resolution, among others, that we actually recognize and recommend that the government, NGOs, and professional bodies to continue to work together to create vaccine and vaccination literacy among the general public. I think still we need to continue to work on this so that Malaysian in general, because as I said, there's not even the study just still pointed out some of the issues of knowledge about the correct thing about vaccine. Mm-hmm. So these are the things that we still need to continue to focus on how we educate the general public about vaccine. And we also urge the government to recognize that the success in vaccination is not only dependent on the Ministry of Health. Mm-hmm. We have to work with other ministries, for example, the Ministry of Education, Ministry of Family Affairs, that deals with the preschool children, that kind of thing. So there are various departments that work on childhood well-being. And so probably every resources need to be governized and coordinated to achieve that same goal. So in that resolution, we also suggested to ministry to have to consider mandatory vaccination, especially for unreasonable non-compliance. And of course, I mean, when the parents refuse, there might be reason behind it. But those with no valid reason, for example, how can we deal that in terms of regulatory framework? I mean, something that we suggested to the government to have a look and to consider, and also to consider some of the best practices, even in some developed countries like Australia and in Singapore, for example. Mm,
yes, where Australia has no jab, no play. Where childcare benefits are taken away or you don't get them if your child is not immunized. But it's interesting that you brought up, vaccine literacy, because, the word vaccine is suddenly very popular again, and sort of for the right reasons, I guess, everybody is eyeing this idea of the COVID-19 vaccine, which is going to save us all. Immediately, what I'd like to find out is with things like the movement control order and other countries are doing some sort of lockdown or restrictions as well. Are these affecting immunization services from being carried out?
Okay, now, of course, there's some concern about this because of the MCOs, but I hope parents will continue to bring their children for vaccination because as far as I know, healthcare services are still considered essential services, where the services are being provided. But probably some of the public clinics that I know, they are rescheduling the vaccination day because for the purpose of crowd control. So they're making reappointment and try to manage the crowd so that too many people come at one time. But the immunization program still continues. Recently, my granddaughter had this, her immunization during this MCO. So I don't see any reasons why this program should stop. So it should not impact so much. But even if there's still great concern about taking the child to the clinic during this period, we can always wait a little while. There's no harm of waiting a little bit. But have to do it as soon as possible, the MCO being lifted. So I don't see a major impact in that sense now, because I don't think that there was instruction to hold on to the immunization, but it's just a matter of rescheduling the appointment so that less crop at the clinics.
Yeah. But of course, the pandemic has made a lot more people realize the critical role of vaccines in infectious diseases. And it's probably too soon to say, but do you foresee this changing vaccine hesitancy trends?
Yeah, I think we should capitalize on this, on this scenario, this kind of situation. Because in contagious infection, when the disease can spread very quickly and can cause complication and even death, and what more if there's no effective treatment like what we're facing with COVID-19 now? We don't have anything for this virus. So our only avenue to protect ourselves from this infection is practically by having a vaccination program for it. So I think that, under such a situation, when you are under threat, your own survival has been threatened, we know there's a technology that can help us to do. Are we still refusing to have the vaccination for that matter? So I think we want to capitalize on this situation and help to enhance the vaccine literacy among the general public about the very important roles vaccine plays in infectious disease control.
What are the areas that you would say we need to strengthen in terms of vaccine research and development? Malaysia is not a great player in vaccine research.
Yes, it's rather unfortunate. But I don't know whether maybe the government would like to now look at how COVID has threatened the health security of the country. In fact, for that matter, any infectious disease which can pose a serious health challenge is a health security threat. But unfortunately, Malaysia in general still is lacking in the capacity to develop and produce vaccine. Despite previous attempts towards this capacity building, now just take COVID-19 for that matter. Mm-hmm. Works by other countries are in progress now. China is working very far ahead of many other countries in terms of the vaccine development, and the USA and also Europe. But even if China produces it, say, by middle of next year, will they want to sell the vaccine to other countries when they have 1.4 billion of their own population to vaccinate? So even vaccines available by one year from now, we in Malaysia may not have access to it because nobody wants to sell to us.
That's right.
So, it's a real health security matter when we think in that way. So that's why I think that the government may need to relook at the at these issues in a bigger context about the importance of developing the vaccine research and industries in the country. I mean, economic factor may be one aspect, but you may also want to consider this health security aspect of it in looking at whether we need to invest in these very high-end pharmaceutical industries.
Mm.
Although we may have failed before, I mean, we have programs to develop, but we failed. But why can't we just learn from those failures and try to build up again for the better of the future? And that's what I thought about the needs of government to really relook again on the policies of having concerted, coordinated work in vaccine development and research.
Why do you think we failed?
We do not have good, strong leadership in this area, or maybe because we lack the technical capacities in this area. I don't know. I mean, of course, you want to look into this, really do a proper audit and determine where the problem is. And knowing that's problem, and then probably we need to address that and move forward and come and work on it. At one time, in the early years, is producing the vaccine for the country.
Mm-hmm.
That was history. Meaning, previously, we have the capacity for vaccine production in IMR.
Mm.
But of course, London is under public system. But when the farmers come in with more efficient process of doing things, of course, at that time, we thought that it's cheaper to buy the vaccine rather than to develop it.
Mm.
But now, when we look at it from the health security perspective, of course, I mean, in terms of business, there's still big business there. I mean, if you look carefully, I mean, especially Malaysia being a member of OIC countries,
mm-hmm.
we have a huge OIC market to tap on.
Yes.
Being a senior members of the OIC, for example. I mean, to me, that's still, I mean, it's economically viable, but of course, I mean, certainly they have to work to look more into it. But the elements of health security must come into the picture, in the equation.
Yes, and it's so alarming, to realize that if we are not able to support ourselves, we may not have the resources anywhere else.
Yeah. Mm. People may have the vaccine, but they want to keep it to themselves.
Absolutely. Do you have a final message for us for this World Immunization Week, Dr. Lokman?
I urge all parents in the country to please don't be selfish. Think about your children. Sometimes I thought that some of these parents are a little bit selfish in the sense that, well, they have been protected by vaccine themselves when they were small, but now they are denying the same right to their own children. Think about it.
Thank you so much, Dr. Lokman. I've been speaking to Professor Dato Dr. Lokman Hakim, Pro Vice Chancellor for Research at International Medical University. You've been listening to Health and Living on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.